This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, returning to continue my conversation with Greg Hallett, where you can visit his website at Greg, G-R-E-G, Hallett, H-A-L-L-E-T-T.com, and you'll discover he's published quite a few books, including on some of the monsters of history, where we're going to learn more about them. At the moment, we're talking about the events in New Zealand and the corruption of the judiciary and the control of the mafia and the Mossad in that idyllic paradise where even my own aunt and uncle once immigrated, but they found they were incapable of being assimilated. So while they wanted to live in New Zealand, the New Zealanders didn't welcome them. It's an odd thing, Greg. Perhaps you could comment on why Americans don't find living in New Zealand quite what they thought it would be.
A lot of the Americans who come to New Zealand have an idealistic image of New Zealand. They think it is the mountains, the rivers, and the streams. And they think it's, it got rated the most honest country in the world recently, but that's actually a poll when 99% of the votes actually come from other countries, and it's their perceptions of New Zealand as through the media. And in the whole survey, which was 10 million US in funding, Transparency International never interviewed one undercover agent.
highly unrepresentative sample, Greg.
Oh, yeah, completely unrepresentative. It's all these people are funded. And all of the data is 2 to 5 years old. And it's all heavily censored, presented by suits from business colleges. New Zealanders can be quite hard, and they sort of have this attitude where they try to see through you as quick as possible and write you off as quick as possible. So what you've got is a whole lot of lonely people wandering around looking at their jandals.
Very funny.
You know, it's not Vienna. People don't dress up here. It's like a South Pacific island. It's very, very casual. Majority of the people walk around in shorts and jandals and a t-shirt 90% of the time.
Well, you know, we lived in Sarasota for 5 years at one point in time in the early 80s, and I got used to living in a swimsuit, and ever since, wherever we moved, I've continued to live in a swimsuit. I'm wearing one now, as a matter of fact, but even when we were in Duluth, Minnesota, in the middle of the winter, where it would get to 35 below, Greg, I would be in the house in a swimsuit.
I hope it's a full wetsuit.
So, just an ordinary swimsuit.
Oh, good.
So I think I might be very comfortable in New Zealand if, if they can't see through me and I put on a few pounds. I think that would be a tough trick. Hey, let's go back to 9/11, my friend. Tell me about this holographic thing. Can holograms be projected on nothing, just into space, into air, or do they require something reflective?
No, they can now do four-dimensional holograms. So they're three-dimensional, plus they move. And so they can project them out of, let's say, the 50th floor of Twin Tower, and they can get that image coming in from about 3 miles out. The noise, it was interesting that there was a rainstorm the night before 9/11, a massive hurricane, which actually only got to within about 500 kilometers of New York. But there was rain in New York, but they had the sounds of thunder, which was exactly the same as the sounds of planes approaching at low level. So they did the sound test the night before.
Really?
Mm.
That's fascinating.
Not many people have picked up on that.
No, probably. I like that. That's a very interesting suggestion. Yep. Yep. Have you read Christopher Bolin's book about the final solution or exposing 9/11? He's got a book out there where he's talking about the role of the Mossad and offering a lot of evidence. Have you seen that yet?
Oh, well, the Mossad is basically controlling everything. Israel controls America, and the Mossad controls Israel. And the Mossad also controls Britain. And the British royal family is a subset of the Rothschilds family, who basically own Israel, created Israel through the Balfour Agreement, which was actually a half-page letter, which was misinterpreted as an agreement. So the Mossad are currently controlling Britain and America. So anything that happens there and any wars they get involved in are Mossad actions.
Well, let's go back to the Balfour Agreement and to the World War II and all that, which seems to have created, you know, been the context for the creation of Israel. Why don't you point out some of the salient features of the historical events that were taking place, which were no doubt widely misunderstood at the time?
Well, Hitler was a Rothschild. He was the grandson of Lionel Nathan Rothschild, and there's a new theory that's just been brought out that he was actually the son of King George V, illegitimate son, while he was 20-ish year old, living in Bavaria. And that's a possibility, but there's no further data on it other than one letter provided by Benjamin Fulman, with one letter, so there's no further backup evidence on that. But Hitler was in England from February 1912 to May 1913.
Greg, if the king was the father, who was the mother?
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, he was either the one of the two. He was an illegitimate son of Lionel Nathan Rothschild, or illegitimate grandson of Lionel Nathan Rothschild, or the illegitimate son of King George the Fifth. But King George the Fifth was the illegitimate grandson of Nathan May Rothschild. And King George the Fifth and Winston Churchill were half-brothers.
Just to ask about this, you know, the royal family is so closely studied throughout its history, it seems difficult how we can have an heir appear off in left field. I mean, how was this done? How was this heir assimilated into the family without the public noticing?
Which, Winston Churchill?
No, I'm talking about, the George the Fourth, I take it?
George the Fifth.
Third.
Well, George V goes and lives in Bavaria when he's in his early 20s, shags some woman and has an illegitimate child, and then leaves and forgets him, but he's still registered as an illegitimate royal, so he gets promoted to lead Germany and destroy it on behalf of Britain, which is exactly what he did. He destroyed their whole intergenerational military executive in Germany, plus destroyed Germany and got Germany to fund Israel until 2094.
What's your guilt? What's your take on the Holocaust?
I think there might be a zero added.
You're not a Holocaust believer.
I've studied the Second World War reasonably extensively, and when you get past the news releases and presentations into actually what went down, everything is misinterpreted. Absolutely everything. So there's no facts stated in any history books sort of pre 1995 that you can really take on board. Even Hugh Trevor Roper's book was just so full of holes that when you study the holes in history that he created, you actually get to the truth. And the truth of the matter was that when Hitler was supposedly committed suicide in the bunker, there were five other Hitlers shot on top of the bunker, and none of them were Hitler. Like, Hitler was actually got out of Berlin by Ian Fleming in Operation Winnie the Pooh.
Really?
Yeah. Hitler was always a British agent, which is the title of one of my books. Hitler was a British agent, and you can tell there's some truth in that because people are now writing books about that book, which is kind of nice, you know, it's a bit of an accolade.
Well, what's your take on Buchenwald and Auschwitz and Dachau and so forth, the great concentration camps where so many are supposed to have been put to death?
Some topics are still under development. They're still being discussed. People are still presenting new information and asking new questions. So that particular topic of how many Jews were killed, I tend to steer away from. But the Jews claim that 6 million Jews were killed. But, you know, I've heard figures that there were just 250,000 Jews in Europe at the time. But if 6 million Jews were killed, 26 million Russians were killed, more than any other country.
Yeah.
So shouldn't we be creating a separate country for Russians?
Except they have one.
have we got a Balfour Agreement for Russians? You know, and no, we don't. Well, Stalin was an illegitimate Rothschild as well. He was the son of Baron Edmund de Rothschild, who's a French Rothschild, who is also possibly the father of Chairman Mao.
Really?
Making stuff so now half.
You have a genetic theory of the origin of some of the great monsters of history.
Oh no! I've studied their origins, and I've studied the claimed origins and the claimed families, and what all of these people, including like Bill Clinton and now Barack Obama, is that all of their family histories are so confused, absolutely confused. None of the world leaders seem to have a straight history. Like I have one father and one mother, and I lived in this town all my life, and I'm honest to God, and this is where I am at the top of the heap. None of them are like that. They all have massively confused histories, and there's arguments now whether Barack Obama is even born in America or Hawaii. He seems to have been born in Africa.
Kenya.
You know, that's the latest theory, but you know, there's other theories that he was actually a clone of Pharaoh Akhenaten and was created in Fort Leavenworth with horse blood over a couple of generations.
With horse blood? Did I hear you correctly? With horse blood?
Horse blood. Thoroughbred horse blood. Like, blacks had no status in World War II. So they would be marched into Fort Leavenworth for blood tests. It's called blood farming. So they'd go into Fort Leavenworth and they wouldn't come out. So they were testing horse blood mixed with human blood from 1942.
Based upon my knowledge of genetics and evolution, that seems to me highly improbable. Not that the experiments might not take place, but that they could have any kind of success.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Time has asked about face. And what we get has already been invented for 20 to 150 years beforehand. And in the case of mummification, what the Egyptians were doing in 3500 BC, we still can't do now. Like Lenin's body is supposed to have been mummified in about 1927. But it's 22. It's rotting. The body's rotting, right? So what they've found with the ape mummification, when they've done it right, is that they can actually take cells off it and clone off those cells. And we're talking about things like, you know, cloning animals at the moment, cloning your favorite pet. But the information that we're getting about cloning has actually already been done on humans and already been done 50 years back.
Could it be the case, Greg, that the Egyptians were better at mummification in part because of the arid atmosphere that, you know, in the tomb, that there were just the right conditions to preserve bodies if they were prepared properly, and that in Moscow, that's not the case?
Well, Moscow's cold. You know, the Egyptian desert is hot and dry, but, you know, downstairs, underground, it's just dry. But the Egyptians were also, you know, taking the brains and the guts out and doing it absolutely expertly, absolutely brilliantly.
Yes, because those organs would be among the first to decay and rot in the body.
Yeah, but put it, you know, 5,500 years ago, they were doing a better job of it than we can do now.
Yes.
And what modern science has shown is that we can grow things off the cells of mummies. And if we get a cell of a mummy, we can turn it into a live cell and grow something off it, like another human. The theory is in Antarctica now that they're growing an adult human in 24 hours. That's the theory. I just put it out there.
24 hours?
24 hours. Yeah. So you can tell the military truth and the high-end military intelligence truth because they release the truth through fiction, through fictional movies, especially action fiction movies.
Yeah.
So watch those. Like, for instance, like the DEA actor, Bruce Willis, he's always got the latest military equipment. We don't know about it yet, but it turns up on film. Turns up in film to scare off opposing armies. You know, and it's just a fantasy. And then 10 years later or 15 years later, we find out that it's standard military issue equipment. And that happens time and time again.
Well, there are, it seems to me, insuperable obstacles to developing an adult in 24 hours. We don't have to buy that, but, you know, I mean, not even the acquisition of the kinds of information you'd need to master language, behavior, skills, and all that couldn't possibly occur in 24 hours, because there we're talking about an interaction between the phenotype and the environment to acquire traits that aren't solely genetically based, but
You can plant a language in a person in 3 days.
I rather doubt that, Greg.
No, it's true. They even have courses in French, 3-day immersion course in French. This is going back to 1988. And you spend 3 days in there only speaking French. You come out speaking French. But the military stuff, that's civilian stuff, right? The military stuff is 100 times more powerful. And the whole education system that we have as civilians, we're learning crap stuff, and we're learning by the slowest methods. If you, for instance, occupy the conscious mind and the unconscious mind with things like music and lights, and then download stuff into the subconscious, it's incredibly rapid. You can actually train someone into an international position in 10 hours.
Well, you know,
I know this because I've dealt with the Russians on it. Like, you know, I went to Russia at the end of the Cold War and had lunch with the KGB and interviewed them, and we exchanged stuff. And then one of them flew out and stayed with me for a month and briefed me, and then trained me into a couple of positions of my choosing.
On a connection,
it's called reconstruction of the subconscious.
On a connectionist model of the brain, you're talking about the synaptic connections that are going to, where you can have neurons that are stimulated to a certain degree before they make the connection, and it's the patterns of activation that bring about behavior or that can be stimulated to represent things in the environment. All this takes an enormous amount of time to develop in relation to any patterns of neural activation that aren't innate, genetic, and inborn.
Yeah, but what you've just said is what we've learned in civilian education, how things happen with synaptic connections. But with the subconscious, you can download huge amounts of information, lifetimes of information, it used to be 10 hours, and 2002, it was 10 hours, so they've probably got it down now to an hour.
I doubt that very much, Greg. I'll just say.
I'm just telling you this what it is. This is military intelligence information, yeah, as opposed to civilian stuff.
Well, I'll just tell you that, you know, you've published 7 books, I've published 28, and that I have done a lot of work on the theoretical foundations of computer science, artificial intelligence, cognitive science, most recently on evolution and mentality. You might look at a couple of my books, Philosophy and Cognitive Science, Computers and Cognition, and most recently, The Evolution of Intelligence. Are humans the only animals with minds, Greg? And I'll just say, I find it very difficult to, you know, take those conjectures or hypotheses seriously. Not that your other work is thereby contaminated. I'll just say, in relation to my own research, I find it highly doubtful that those claims are true. Well, we don't have to pursue that. I'm fascinated by what you've been doing.
Well, I'll tell you a little story then.
Please.
While I was doing my architecture degree at Auckland University, I spent a lot of money and time on live-in psychological workshops. So you'd live in there for a weekend or a week, etc. So I ended up with all these psychological models. So I was like became like a free thinker in psychological models. And I was a fast integrator, so I could get the idea and then act as if almost immediately. So then when I went to Russia, I noticed that the citizens were deconstructed. That is, they were thinking like the state, not like an individual. So, and that was December 89, a month after the Berlin Wall came down. So I got the KGB agent who's following me and shouted him to lunch, got him a bit drunk, and we traded a few secrets. Then I went back to Budapest where I didn't speak the language, which was an advantage. And I lived there for another 10 months. And I wrote up about 30 levels of interaction from actions to what the person was doing and how you could stimulate and reflect those actions. And then I developed about 5 different layers of dynamics between them. And then January 2002, I leaked it out on radio that I'd done that. And then in July 2002, the president of the Scientist Club in St. Petersburg flew out to New Zealand and asked to meet with me and stay with me for a month and brief me on gravity and anti-gravity. And he said, you know, the way you work out gravity is you work out how to fly the planet. So we workshop how to fly the planet and wrote a book on that. And that got stolen by the SIS and the Mossad on 11th May 2005. And while we were doing the briefing, he said, oh, you seem to understand a few things, so do you want a reconstruction in the subconscious, you know? So what he'd done is he got the Russian equipment for deconstructing the subconscious, converted it to reconstructing the subconscious, brought it out to New Zealand, stayed with me. And I got had my subconscious reconstructed into 2 positions of my choosing in 10 hours, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Then the next day, I met an aide to the Prime Minister and the Mafia boss having coffee together. So, you know, we sort of sat down, had mates and traded stories for 7 years.
tell me, what transition, what change occurred during this interval of time of reconstruction?
When you alter someone's subconscious, they don't know that it has been altered because they're already acting as if. They don't know that anything has changed, but everything has changed. And the thing about changing the subconscious is that your subconscious draws everything around you according to that training. So all of a sudden you're meeting the people that you need to meet to achieve what you need to achieve. So it's very, very subtle and incredibly effective.
So you're telling me you actually would be unable to discern the changes that took place during this interval of time because of the effects of the process itself?
Well, what happened from then, from July 2002, is I started to meet a whole lot of military intelligence people, and that allowed me to write another 6 books, and another 2 coming out shortly, so another 8 books. It allowed me to write 4 books in 1 year. How to Take Over the World, Stalin's British Training, Gifting the United Nations to Stalin, and New Zealand, A Blackmailer's Guide, which is about 1,500 pages.
Do you think this was affected by this reorganization of your subconscious?
Yeah, put it this way, they don't talk to anyone. And they just don't talk to, you know, people moping around. They talk to people who have some direction.
They being
the living libraries and talking dictionaries. They being the ones who know, right? And the ones who know don't talk to anyone, and they'll travel a long distance to talk to the right one.
For example, even if they're in New Zealand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me just ask this, which will carry over after the break, which is coming up on us. Do you think Obama has had his subconscious reorganized?
I think that every American president for quite a while has had their subconscious organized, reorganized, reconstructed, or actually deconstructed. I think they've had their subconscious deconstructed to think according to the state. And the primary requirement of an American president is that they're a good public speaker and they do bugger all else. It's often that they say one thing and do another, and people believe what they say because they're the president of the United States. But the actual title of the president of the United States is pirate captain of a British plantation.
On that wonderful thought, Greg, we're going to take our second break. We'll be right back. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very fascinating guest today, Greg Hallett. You can visit his website at greghallett.com. We'll be right back.